sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
Getting them to switch to a new message, to pivot to the new set of things that are being positioned and sold and they're considered strategic by the new leadership. You know, oftentimes sales is slow. The best sellers are slow to the uptake. You know, add to that, you know, the challenge associated with every minute is a selling minute. And if you're asking someone to get out of the field, out of a selling motion and into, you know, multiple hours or potentially multiple days of training and certification, most salespeople are not going to look at that and go, oh, yeah, I'm excited about doing that.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. That was Jeff Santelice. He's the Chief Revenue Officer at MindTickle. And in this conversation with Jeff, we talk about a range of topics. We start with what it means for a seller to be sales ready. It's an important topic, sales readiness. And then we delve into the topic of sales learning. And we have a discussion around what are the levers that managers can pull that really make a difference in terms of improving sales performance. Jeff also shares the KPIs that he relies on to manage his team. And he reveals the one KPI that everyone uses that he thinks is totally useless. And then we also talk about QBRs and how to run an efficient one in the midst of this pandemic. All this and much, much more. But before we get Jeff, let me ask you a favor. If you're a regular listener to this show, or perhaps this is your first episode you listen to, and you haven't had the chance yet to rate and review this program, well, it'd be doing me a big favor if you could leave a review for us on iTunes or a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd certainly appreciate that. So thank you for your help. All right, let's jump into it. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
So where you've been hanging out during the whole pandemic?
So I've been, like most of the other folks in my role, working remotely from home. And home for me is in Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado. Company's in San Francisco, though.
It is indeed. So, you know, I've been, you know, fairly accustomed to working remotely over the last handful of years. So, you know, remote work is not necessarily, novel. But at the same time, you know, I've been very accustomed to being on the road, whether that's, you know, meeting with customers, prospects, partners. And that's been very, very different over the course of the last 6+ months.
Yeah, I mean, I tell the story about, I'm same way, on the road constantly, and I've flown once in 6 months, and it's like, this was a few months ago, I was packing to get on a flight, and found myself sort of paralyzed in the middle of the floor, and my wife's looking at me going, what's wrong? I said, I forgot how to pack. It used to be so routine. I knew where everything went, and in my backpack, and in my suitcase, and then it's like the first time I've done it.
Yeah, you're actually ahead of me. I haven't gotten onto a flight since March 6th. So,
yeah, well, that was my next to last flight. But we did the first, we had March, April, May in Manhattan, and then escaped out to San Diego at the beginning of June. So,
good for you.
Well, yeah, actually, things are much better in Manhattan than they are in San Diego these days, relative to, you know, infection rates and so on. But nonetheless, feels a little more open and free out here. So, right. Yeah, we've been enjoying that. But, well, let me ask you. I mean, this question I'm asking all my guests these days is okay, I haven't been on a plane for 6 months or more. What's the biggest lesson you've learned about yourself during the pandemic?
It's a great question. You know, what I've learned is, you know, the opportunity, well, the challenge of not being able to travel has actually, you know, been an opportunity in many ways. I think, you know, for, you know, those of us who have been, you know, very traditional in their enterprise selling motion, have, you know, have built the expectation and worked with the expectation that, you know, getting business done requires establishing an in-person relationship, being able to, you know, see a person in person, shake their hand, you know, get a sense of, you know, their, you know, just how they're reacting in person, and being able to read off of that and feed off of that. Mm-hmm. You know, what I've found, you know, over the course of the last handful of months is you can still establish a rapport. You know, when everyone's forced to go remote, the opportunity to, you know, leverage some new tools, some new approaches, and, you know, still try to get to that same outcome, which is, you know, someone on the other side that is, you know, looking at you and believing in you, and assuming and assessing, you know, that, you know, you are, you know, a trusted advisor. And I mm-hmm. think, you know, our team is, and myself, you know, I've been able to, I think, successfully navigate to that, you know, new reality. And in the process, you know, that the number of hours that I've spent on the road, you know, whether that's commuting to the airport, the time at the airport, the time in flight, you know, I've been able to, you know, find ways to use that time, you know, in, you know, more productive and frankly healthy ways, you know, for myself. So that's been, you know, very, very positive. You know, as I try and look for, you know, whatever silver linings we can from this pandemic situation, you know, those are, you know, a handful of them.
Well, it's interesting, several interesting points in there. One is, yeah, there's been this sort of rush of books about virtual selling that people have rushed to market over the last 6 months. And yeah, I read a bunch of those, and I've certainly have read a couple, and it's like, yeah, I mean, I sort of believe that the basics are the basics regardless of the medium. You know, that your ability to form rapport with someone is really, if you are able to do it in person, then you're able to do that virtually. If you're not able to do it virtually or remotely, or do it in person, doing it virtually is not going to save you. And it's like, it's like, you know, okay, got it. It's, yeah, if you're good at connecting with a human being and building a rapport, and you're good at asking the right questions and just, you know, establishing the conversations, the flow of that and seeing where they go, to me, the medium doesn't matter. Yeah, but if you're not good at those things, you're actually going to get punished by this medium.
Yeah, very, very interesting, you know, takeaways. And I agree with that, the insight there that, you know, if you were capable of doing it beforehand, you know, you're going to be equally capable, you know, in this, you know, new medium, or, you know, leveraging this new medium. And I think, you know, part of the, you know, the reason that the in-person medium, you know, ended up being very important from a selling perspective was that, you know, the belief was the customer was expecting you, you know, to be there, you know, in person as part of, you know, as part of the process. You know, the forcing function that's shifted, at least, you know, from my perspective, is, you know, if you've been in an enclosed tube with 250 strangers for 4 hours, you know, the last thing in the world that, you know, your prospect wants is for you to, you know, land in, you know, their home or in their office.
These days, for sure.
So nobody wants you in person. So, you know, now both parties are operating, you know, under the same expectation, which is, hey, we somehow need to establish trust, you know, build a rapport you know, over this new medium, you know, let's get to it. And, you know, being able to establish that, you know, to your point, you know, is, you know, the skill set that, you know, the new seller in this remote environment needs to ensure that they, you know, they're capable of doing. And I think all of us that are, you know, good at what we do, you know, have proven the ability to establish rapport in person. And if both parties are, you know, willing and capable of engaging in this new medium, you know, they should be able to do the same.
Well, you raised an interesting, well, several interesting points there. One that we'll dive into now is this idea that sellers have this expectation that the customer wanted them to be there. And I speak from the perspective of decades, probably the oldest person in the whole audience, including the people listening, of traveling around the world, dealing with customers domestically and internationally for, well, said for decades, is I never thought, geez, the customer wants to see me. My, and I was working for startups where we didn't have unlimited travel budgets yet. We still had to do what we needed to do. But for me, it was always, I want to go visit them because there's something I could make happen, right? Whether it's making, creating momentum, moving to the next stage, answering specific questions. I never felt like it was the demand was coming from the customer. It was always like, yeah, I look at it as, yeah, I want you to invest some of your time in me because I've got something to give you and you're going to get a return on that time.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. And, you know, and I'll agree with that. You know, certainly as a sales leader and as a seller, you know, there is a desire to, you know, capture the time of the customer. You know, the time that you're in front of that customer is time that your competitors are not, right? You know, the time that you're, you know, in front of them and potentially, you know, reading and, you know, better understanding, you know, the customers, their issues, challenges, and seeing both the verbal and nonverbal language from, you know, from, you know, the key champion, as well as, you know, potentially others across the organization, there's positive there. But, you know, I will say that, you know, my perspective is that, you know, many customers, particularly when they're making strategic investments, and specifically strategic investments from, you know, organizations that may be, you know, more in the startup, you know, portion, you know, of their life cycle, mm-hmm. you know, they want to, you know, get in front of, you know, the executives that, you know, they're betting on. And that time, that in-person time often is very, you know, crucial, to making the, you know, the decision to go or not go, with a particular, you know, technology solution. And oftentimes absolutely. What I hear is they're making that decision, you know, less on feature function, but they're betting on the partnership and the team that, you know, that they've since met. So I do think there's a win in, you know, in that, you know, relationship building on both sides.
Oh, absolutely. But my perspective was slightly different, which was, and I agree on all those things you said, was that just who's creating the impetus for the meeting. And if you're saying it's, not saying you specifically, but if as a seller, you're saying, well, geez, I'm sort of waiting to take my cue from the customer. My contention is, well, that's the wrong approach. That's the wrong perspective to have on it. Because, yeah, you need to be, to the extent you can, you need to be driving that outcome in that conversation. And it doesn't mean that, yeah, they definitely want to see you. I worked for startups my whole career, practically, selling mission-critical communications networks. Yeah, they wanted to see us because we were small. Oftentimes, the size of the contract is bigger than our annual revenue.
Right.
So we definitely had to go meet them, but it was sort of done on our schedule.
Right, right.
And we weren't waiting for them to sort of say, well, we need to meet your guys. It's like, we're way ahead of you on that, right? We've got this planned out. And part of that was, I think this whole lot of discussion about travel and businesses, because sales teams are sort of, I would say lazy, but not in the sense that people sort of talk about it. It's the travel sort of became lazy. It's just like, yeah, let's get on a plane. Let's go see somebody. And I found it's formative part of my career selling, you know, to major enterprises, working for startups where we had limited funds, oftentimes bootstrapped, is we had to be able to justify what was going to happen in that meeting in order to get approval to go travel. And I think it's such a great way for sellers to look at it. It's not just, well, I'm going to get on a plane, and it's like, no, what's going to happen? Right? What's going to be the outcome that's worth it and to justify doing this right now?
Absolutely.
And there's just this rigor around travel that I think has been missing. And so, like I said, we'd use it sort of lazily, but you really need to look at it. So how do I use it strategically to advance the sale?
Absolutely. I agree with everything that you just said there.
Okay. We're done. That's all I wanted. Well, so tell people who aren't familiar with MindTickle, tell us what MindTickle does.
So MindTickle is a sales readiness solution. And, you know, our vision and the path that we're taking is to service customer-focused organizations and to ensure that every one of their resources that is in front of a customer, a prospect, a partner is on message, on task the first time and every time. And our strong belief is that every interaction is a revenue-generating opportunity, a brand creating opportunity. And you can either, drive that new revenue opportunity, or, establish and enhance your brand, or you can do the opposite. And it's absolutely critical that all of those resources, end up being on message, on task. And our solution, our platform helps an organization do that By executing on a handful of different fronts. First, we end up providing a medium through which all of those employee resources can learn about what it is that new message, that new positioning really is, and we do it in a very micro learning, engaging fashion. And once that content is delivered and consumed, we then provide a medium through which that employee can practice delivering that message in a compelling, concise, confident manner. And they do that through role plays within our platform. And as those role plays are being practiced and then ultimately submitted, your frontline managers, your coaches, end up being able to provide feedback and input to help that employee continue to tune that message and step up in terms of their performance and ability. And then once the employee is actually in front of a customer or prospect, we provide a medium for the frontline manager to provide real-time coaching to ensure that when they're doing well, they're getting positive reinforcement and feedback. And when they're seeing gaps, they're also able to provide a consistent level of feedback and input, as well as remediation to assist that. And that coaching and feedback in execution in front of a real prospect is done through our platform, as well as through an automated bot that can record those calls, analyze those calls, and critically, in our platform, closing the loop of our enablement and readiness vision is assign automatically, remediation capabilities, remediation programs, for that employee as they start seeing, areas where they need to improve versus what it is that you wanted and intended. And all of this, that I just described is available on a single platform. Single user experience, single UI, single data model, which allows for tremendous, actionable analytics for managers to really understand, as sales leaders in particular, where are people on message? Where are they off? How is this impacting my key goals, my key metrics, which oftentimes for sales leaders end up being around sales productivity to help them get to their number? And very specifically, if they're seeing churn and things of that nature, how do I get new sellers on board and ramped and productive as quickly as possible? So, our analytics, end up providing eyeballs into, things such as that. And that's where, we become a pretty critical component of the, sales stack as revenue leaders continue to drive forward.
Right. So, but just to make sure that people understand, is as you said, it's a platform. All the learning content, though, is produced by your customers for their team.
That is correct.
Okay.
We are the underlying platform that allows you to deliver that core content in a very concise, engaging, gamified manner that delivers the content that sellers need at the time of their specific need. So think of us as the delivery vehicle. The core content is, you know, delivered or created by the customer. And we do have a series of partnerships with, you know, folks like Blanchard, CVI, Sandler, and others, whereby if a customer is in need of, you know, core, you know, sales methodology, sales training, partner ecosystem types of content, our partners can oftentimes deliver that, you know, within our platform.
Right. So define sales readiness. What's it a measure of?
Sales readiness to us is, you know, really the ability for our customers, you know, and particularly our sales leaders, to assess clearly the competencies that you know that matter that really drive the needle for and again most often we're servicing sales leaders and their teams. What we end up doing very, very well is helping our customers identify competencies, both hard skill as well as soft skill competencies. Work with them to define the programs that can help those people in those roles improve on those competencies. And then ultimately, we're able to determine and correlate performance in those specific competencies to performance to key metrics that sales leaders are really tracking and tracking closely. So as an example, everyone's tracking, bookings and revenue. And what you'll be able to see is, who are the folks that are, actually performing on the revenue front, and how are they performing relative to the competencies that the sales team, the sales organization, the sales leadership have defined as being critical and important. And by being able to correlate those two things, what's interesting, and this is oftentimes, I think, something that, many of your peers, and you probably have seen this over the years as well, as you're continuing to build and scale up your team, oftentimes you're able to assess, not necessarily in a hard analytic fashion, but you're looking at your team and going, wow, this set of people made their number. I've been out there with them. They're not necessarily our top tier, sellers. How are they making their number? Why are they making their number? Are they truly our best people? And then on the flip side of that, you've got, sellers that, you've worked with in the past. They're very good at, at what they do. And you're seeing them and saying, man, why isn't, Jane or Joe, I know they're very good. Why aren't they, getting to their number? And you don't necessarily have hard data behind that. And if you were only to make, your, top 10% and bottom 10%, analyses just based off of the number, you might be, praising folks that, frankly are getting lucky. And you might be, culling folks that are really good, strong contributors, but maybe it was, a bad patch that they were giving or bad timing. What we end up doing
which is an interesting point though, because I mean, let's face it, luck and circumstance play a large role in sales success.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all.
I mean, it's hard to factor in, right? So it's like, yeah, was this the bad problem with the patch or the person or both?
Well, what's interesting about MindTickle and our solution is it actually provides you with hard data and an ability for you to see clearly whether or not that person, that with whatever quadrant he or she is in, their level of readiness based off of, how they're performing on the competencies that you've graded. And you can clearly see, this person is, doing really well and, knows and understands the messaging, knows and understands the competition, knows and understands how to, handle objections. They perform incredibly well in terms of all of their role plays that they're driving. So it's not a matter of skill set or gap that is, holding them back. So you can actually see that and make data-driven decisions as you're continuing to tune your team. So that's where, I think, to your point, there is, a lot of luck. There's a lot of feel. There's a lot of, other soft elements that go into building, scaling, and being successful in, in driving a sales organization. But what you want to be able to do is build more of your core and your base with core data, analytics, and eyeballs that give you confidence that you're going to have something that's not going to be lucky one quarter, but actually repeatable, successful, and scalable over the long haul. And I think MindTickle and our sales readiness platform provides that venue to give sales leaders, the confidence that what they have, they can truly scale and make repeatable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I look at there's sort of this general acknowledgement that over the years, that sales training has failed in its mission. But the issue is not really the content, at least in my mind, not really the content as much as the learning methodology. And which is one of the things I'm interested in the platform that you have is because I think it's one of those that's out there that says, yeah, we're, and it's not just micro learning, but that's certainly a part of it. But, it's in real-time feedback. It's the way people learn. If you've read David Epstein's book, Range, he talks about this in detail. And so I guess one of the things are people understanding that's really the issue? Because, we don't see enough companies, sort of abandoning yet this whole methodology of, hey, let's have a big annual sales kickoff meeting and we'll bring in an expensive speaker, which oftentimes in the past was me. It was, paid well. But you'd walk away knowing that they weren't getting anything out of it, that they were retaining beyond, 25 days.
Yeah, it's a great observation. And if you think about, the people that are, typically in sales positions, these are folks that, are highly, they're very self-confident. They've been successful, through, many phases of their careers. Oftentimes they've been in, the organization that they've been in, they've, just come off of President's Club and, have made quota and have been in their multipliers. These are folks that, they'll walk into the room, confidently, believing that they're the smartest person in that room. And, mm-hmm. Getting them to, switch to a new message, to pivot to, the new set of, things that are being, positioned and sold and they're considered strategic, by, the new leadership, oftentimes sales is slow. The best sellers are slow to the uptake. Add to that, the challenge associated with, every minute is a selling minute. And if you're asking, someone to, get out of the field, out of, a selling motion and into, multiple hours or potentially multiple days of, training and certification, most salespeople are not going to look at that and go, oh, yeah, I'm excited about doing that, right? And whether that's virtual or, in person, frankly, the time for a seller, is oftentimes deemed lost time if they're, forced into that selling environment. And the key to me is, how do you flip the switch and make it something that, sellers want to engage in, that they want to actually, be a part of because they believe that, frankly, it will help them, in their quarter. It will help them in their deal. It will help them get to their quota and into multipliers. And as you mentioned, part of this is ensuring that, you have a medium, that takes into account the role and the personalities that you're trying to engage with. So you can't, do, traditional, multi-day, multi-hour types of courses. It's not going to be something that is going to get adopted. And, if you look at traditional learning and training environments, adoption for sales is incredibly low. So you need to figure out, and what it is that we've done is very much micro-learning based. It's very much gamified. One of the things that we found is that, sellers are highly competitive. They all want to be at the top of, name the leaderboard that's out there. And some selling environments absolutely love, gamifying every element of their motion. And we've built on that front.
At the risk of being contrary, I think that's nuts, though. Right? I mean, it's. I mean, sales itself is competitive, right? I mean, just the nature of selling. We're competing against a competitor, whether it's another company or the company's status quo, the customer's status quo. I mean, and this is, I know, not part of the conversation we were planning on having, but I mean, it's like, isn't there like enough is enough on the competition and the stress that comes with it and, the expectations? And I'm sort of sensitive to this because, we're on the episode of the show that's our show that's being published today, the day that we're recording this, is all about mental health and sales.
Right.
And one of the villains is gamification, quite frankly.
That's interesting. So for us, as we look at it, we've taken advantage of, again, the mindset and the mentality of salespeople, sales leaders, and we've built, gamification to get them engaged, to make it fun, versus, make it stressful. So as an example, we have a capability, it's called HiFly, that, we use for social engagement, across, our user base, within a company. And what it is, just a, it's almost like a 1980s style arcade game where, you're, part of, there are multiple teams and you're part of one of those teams and you're working individually as well as part of a team to fly a balloon, as high as you can possibly get to, over the course of, three different modules, three different, questions. And what's interesting is as a question gets asked, it can be a general question, a general trivia question that could be just very fun. It could be, a question that is very company specific. Maybe you're asking, who's the product leader, responsible for this product line. So, you're forcing folks to familiarize themselves across the organization, mm-hmm. or it could be, a sales methodology or a specific competitor type of question. You can customize this as you please, but as you're asking questions or answering questions, the more you get right, the faster that you get them, answer them, your balloon is, gaining elevation, but you're also using fuel. So, at some point in time, you need to get more fuel. And how you do that is, through, socially engaging either with your team or with other participants, in the game. And if mm-hmm. you think about that, this isn't a high pressure situation. This is, making learning actually very fun and using it in the context of, a familiar UI UX, as of an arcade game. And mixing in both fun trivia as well as important elements that people need to, right. learn and recall and retain. So that's an example of gamification that doesn't sure. put stress into the equation, but rather puts fun, and social engagement into the equation. And that to me is where you strike a nice healthy balance.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to attack gamification per se. It's just that. You have so many things in sales that are enabled by technology that we do because we can, not because we should. Right? And that's, I think, what I'm asking people is just be more thoughtful about that.
Right.
Right? Just because we can have the, we have the technology enables us to blast emails in sequences out to customers at a certain rate doesn't mean that we should.
Yeah.
Right? Just because we can use gamification all the time in every aspect doesn't mean that we should. And it's this lack of, you know, I've seen with the embrace of various technologies is, oh, we can do this. Let's. And no one ever says, maybe we shouldn't.
Right. Right.
And I'm just asking people to add that perspective because it creates, you know, consequences. Yeah. And, you know, many SaaS companies, I'm not new to people listening to the show, is, in SaaS companies, like, one of the things that's missing is selling. Yeah. We're so good at the top of the funnel. And we just sort of play the odds as we filter down. And as a result, we operate really low win rates.
Right.
Well, why are we doing that? Well, it's really a function of what's occurring when we're doing our proactive outreach and so on. Mm. I mean, that's one of the functions. So it's just, I mean, with gamification, I get it. I think the aspects and that it's important to use and does have an impact. But it's like, I hear people talking about, we've gamified everything. It's like, because I think people get tired of it. That's the other part, right? If it's one thing, if it's, something we do every quarter or something we do, at some interval that does make it fun, makes it a contest, so on and so forth, great. But it's like part of the daily routine. I just wonder whether people just sort of begin to tune it out.
Interesting.
So I was going to ask you a question. So, because really, this is a platform. One of my passions is I think there not enough happens in sales is this continuous learning. Mm-hmm. And you addressed it. You said the top sellers, oftentimes, wrinkle their noses when you have things like, hey, spend time on this platform and learn, which I think is more symbolic of a larger issue, which is getting sellers to invest a sufficient amount of time learning. But I'm just sort of curious, is when you look at your own sales team, what's sort of the biggest learning need that you see?
Yeah, great question. And as we've gone through, our own, analysis of how our funnel is performing, one of the mm-hmm. things that, over the course of the last handful of quarters, that, we started with, was really, ensuring that we had all of our team, getting to, the core message and delivering it in a consistent fashion. Because, again, analyzing, mm-hmm. Both, how our frontline managers were, listening in on calls, right. both, top of funnel, middle of funnel, and, at the tail end of the funnel, we were seeing, our team delivering, different messaging, and we needed to drive to, a much more consistent, approach. So that was one area, that we ended up, seeing, our mm-hmm. team, needing, to work on, quite a bit. As we worked through, the last handful of quarters, what we were recognizing is that, our top of the funnel, efforts, where we were really, executing on discovery, and qualifying, specific opportunities in or out, was not where we needed it to be. So recognizing that, we ended up, focusing in, over the course of a quarter, starting with, just as you mentioned, a QBR, where we brought in, an outside expert that, is very adept at, and has a proven methodology for, top of the funnel discovery and objection handling. We started with that as, session during our QBR, and then followed that through over the course of the quarter with a series of missions and role plays and other activities that would continue to reinforce what it is that we learned and take our sellers up through the next levels mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. of learning. So for us, using our analytics to understand where we're where we were weak and challenged, and then leveraging our platform over time to not only, intake, some of the best practices, but also ensure that we were delivering content that would help them, continue to, move up level, on this skill set, and then continue to measure it over time. Those were the areas that, I think, we've been focused on over the course of the last 6 months. And I think it's proving, to show, some significant value, even through this COVID window where, I think all of us thought the sky was going to be falling. We've actually found, a lot of folks, that are, after we got through the initial shock of, the shutdown, they're recognizing that investing in this area, in this arena, now that they've got fewer people that need to be more productive, or, they're finding themselves, with, growth that, they didn't anticipate as they went through the replan, they're actually making, bigger investments, and we're able to uncover those opportunities, partly because of, the investments that we made over the course of the last two quarters.
Yeah. Well, what's our final question for you is in this, more, I don't say philosophical necessarily, but my experience has come to realize over the years of building teams and, consulting with companies extensively about this is that, there's a limit to how much benefit you get out of sort of skills training. And at some point, the difference between tiers of performers is more about mindset and perspective, right? Understanding, having a better understanding of what their job is, or a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, or whatever dimension you want to take on that. And so, how do you look at how do we educate people about that? Because I think at a certain point, the marginal gains, the incremental marginal gains you get from training are small. But if you get people to look at what they're doing differently, perhaps that's where you get more gain and more impact. And including mindset also is, in my mind, is one of the areas we fail with sellers is we don't help them develop the requisite business acumen to be as effective as they could be. So I was wondering, how do you train those things?
Yeah, that's actually a great insight. As I think about my own, approach to some of this, I think about, from a growth aspect perspective, ensuring that, we're even within a specific role, ensuring that we're providing, our team members, with a path to growing, expanding, getting promoted, getting, from, one level of seller, up through, another level of seller, so that they actually have a view into, a career path and a career track, and they know and understand, some of the skill sets that they need to showcase in order to move from one level, to the next. So, as an example, the career tracking and pathing that we've seen, we don't have all of these levels here at MindTickle today. But, at the starting point, is, a BDR. So, a lead development rep, coming in, they will, assuming they hit the right marks, in that specific role, their next role is an associate account executive job, where, they'll take smaller opportunities, they'll have a smaller quota, smaller opportunities. And they're doing a mix of selling and business development. Then they move into an account executive seat, and then as they get more proficient at selling and closing larger deals, they ultimately get moved into a global account manager role or a GAM role, where they're managing a smaller number of total accounts. But these are very large strategic accounts that they need to manage across organizations, and that career track and trajectory, having clarity for the reps in terms of what their path looks like, what skill sets they need to develop over what time frame, is a critical, piece part to seeing, who actually has aspirations to, move up and through that through those various roles, and who, frankly, wants to be the best at, at a specific level, a specific role, without necessarily, moving, transitioning, et cetera. So, as an example, right. I have folks that, it's clear to me, they, are very happy, being a career BDR. It's what they like. It's what they, intend to do. And with both parties, management and the, the individual all understanding that, then we can maximize, how we, engage with that individual, over time. For those that have bigger aspirations, then we can put a different track, a different set of, goals, in place that all of us are working towards. And underlying all this, of course, our platform can help with that. But, as a leader and a sales leader, navigating through that growth mindset, understanding the individual and giving them a track to, success is part of the core equation that I think is key.
Yeah. Well, there's music in my ears when you said somebody wanted to be a career BDR. It's like, just so many companies have this sort of, it's almost like, academia, right? Sort of publish or perish or up or out. And it's like, people are good at this job and they enjoy it. That's like manna for heaven as far as I'm
Absolutely.
Concerned. Because for so many people, for so many people, that role is just torture, right? I mean, I've had guests on the show that said, I worked as hard as I could the first year because I wanted to get out of that job. And it's like, I understand. I did the exact same thing. But God, I want more companies to understand that, if you got people that are good at this.
Oh,
I even encourage them to go. I mean, because we've got underemployed salespeople in their 40s and 50s, and there's sort of this implicit ageism about SDRs and BDRs, unfortunately, that are really good at this stuff. Go hire them.
We have a handful of folks in that role that they thrive. And they have for a long time, and I love it. So those are folks that I want to make sure we continue to nurture and make as successful as possible, because they are, as you mentioned, gold to us.
Yeah.
As an organization.
Yeah. Encourage them. Don't say they're getting too old or that, they must go. It's like, no, I'm with you. All right, Jeff, it's been fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
So if people want to learn more about MindTickle or connect with you, how can they do that?
They can reach out to me, via email, at any point. So, Jeff.Santelices, SANTELICES @ MindTickle.com. And I'll be, very responsive to any of your guests that are reaching out.
Excellent. All right. Well, Jeff, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. As always, we're so grateful for your ongoing support of this program. And I want to thank my guest, Jeff Santelices, for sharing his insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.